just see who else we have. Kurt and Matt, I don't see Matt here. So it's either that or I don't recognize Matt. So I haven't seen Matt the last couple of weeks anyway. I'm going to talk about a low-cost tablet computer. This is essentially a Barnes & Noble Color Nook. It costs $249 at Barnes & Noble. Their stock operating system is essentially an Android, but it's a highly locked-down version of the Android. Originally, you couldn't do much with it. You could use it primarily for reading books. They had a few apps installed. It was Wi-Fi connected. They've upgraded the operating system to where the operating system on it is now, they have large number of apps. It's not open to the full Android market. But a lot of people have put the full Android operating system on it. I'm going to talk some of the pros and cons, and feel free to stop me anywhere in my presentation. Okay. If anybody goes to sleep, where's Blake? You got your gun?
Not today.
No. Okay.
We only have a jab, but he's the only one that falls asleep.
Okay.
And one more, I do retaliate.
Okay, I don't have my light pen. So essentially, the basic thing is that.
Jerry.
Oh, good. Okay, the main thing, I bought my Color Nook primarily as a book reader. One of the real advantages, one of the advantages over the Kindle, for instance, is that it has a larger screen. It doesn't have buttons. I hated the buttons on the Kindle. My daughter and my mother both have Kindles. I like the color. It does have Android apps. It's backlit, so you can read it in dim light. So if you like to read in bed at night and don't want to have a lot of lighting, you can do it. Or if you're watching television with your wife and a commercial comes on, you can read. Don't laugh. I've done that. Okay? But it doesn't do all that well in bright sunlight. So if you are going to go out on a cruise, sit by a poolside and want to read, you may want to use a Kindle or the black and white Nook that uses e-ink. But that's not the objective of this. And the battery life is less than a Kindle. Although I haven't had battery problems. And I recently took a train to Montana and did a lot of reading when they couldn't see outside or things like that. Okay. And again, please feel free to ask questions at any time. Okay. The Nook costs $249, which is one of the lowest priced tablets, although somebody has a Japanese knockoff here that was $90.
Chinese
knockoff. Okay.
So you're saying the Kindle is not a computer.
Okay. Kindle is a computer.
Kindle is about half the price of it.
Yeah. It's a single purpose computer.
This is a color system. The black and white Nook from Barnes & Noble is, I think, about $10 more than the Kindle.
Oh.
Okay.
Does the black and white Nook use the e-ink display?
Yes. But this also has a touch screen and everything else.
Does the black and white Nook run Linux?
It does run Android.
I've been told, but I don't know that actually the Kindle is running a version of the Android also, but not highly locked down. I've never heard of anybody trying to put anything on the Kindle. But essentially, the current version of stock Color Nook is Froyo. Okay, here are a couple of specs. Backlit, 8.1 inch by 5. Weight is 15.8 ounces. Although you can buy cases like this, like I have, that protect it nicely. They add some weight to it. It is heavier than the Kindle. And external micro, that should be a micro SD, up to 32 gigabytes. I've got a 16 gigabyte micro SD on here. And for, as I said, Froyo lockdown. Okay. The stock version of the Color Nook currently does access a market that is controlled by Barnes & Noble. It's not the full Android market. And I looked at that their selection of free apps is small. But one of the things you can do with the stock operating system, they do have certainly a web browser they have since day one. They also have Gmail app and stuff like that, so that you can run Gmail and stuff like that on the stock. Okay. And it has many, many games, both free, most of them $1. If you want to run Angry Birds, I believe that's an app you have to pay for through Barnes & Noble. Whereas on Android, regular Android, there is a free version of Angry Birds, I think. So why do I want to use a stock OS? Well, one is to preserve the warranty. And the book reader has features that are not available in the Nook Android app. Both Nook and Kindle have Android apps, which I've loaded on my phone. So essentially, my presentation is going to be oriented more on dual booting or multi-booting the Nook Color. Yes?
Is it possible to run an OS inside Android? Sure, we do.
Just
running
it.
I think that Ubuntu has been loaded onto it. As a matter of fact, I'm sure Ubuntu has been on it.
Jesse Vincent booted Ubuntu on the Kindle too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the but again, for as a book reader, I happen to like a lot of the features of the book reader. But we're not talking about book reading here tonight. Okay, what are the alternatives? Well, you could run various Android versions, Froyo, Gingerbread, Honeycomb, essentially. You can run Ubuntu as we did it. I haven't tested it. You can easily root the Nook Color and install any one of the above systems. But as I said, you can install systems on a micro SD card, and you can boot the stock OS with no SD card, or you can boot from the SD card. All you do is put the SD card in and boot, and it's going to come up, assuming that you've burned the SD card correctly. And I've actually put about 5 different versions of Android on the SD card before I really came up with something that I found halfway usable. without using ADB and stuff like that.
There was a shortcut there. What's ADB mean?
ADB is, I define it somewhere down here, it is the Android debug
bridge.
That's it, the ADB. And the ADB is a way that you can connect to Android devices directly from Linux or Windows.
Hardware?
Excuse me?
Is it hardware?
Software. You connect through the USB cable. And or USB cable either to your NUC or to here. I rooted this, but I've unrooted it. The methods available to do the multi-boot, I put a few URLs. If you look at rooting the color NUC, you get a lot of different sites how to do it and a lot of different opinions. Yeah.
Can you describe what you mean by rooting it?
Okay. Your most smartphones, most systems come with that you are essentially a user of that phone. You cannot do privileged type operations. You cannot install software that has not been approved, that you can't get from the market on most phones because they're locked down to some extent. You can't do development unless you somewhat root the phone. That's where you do ADB. You can answer that probably better than I can. When you root it, you're essentially a Linux root user.
How do you do that? I mean, what are the steps involved in rooting it? How do you get access to it?
Well, you can explain it, but the basic way you do that is there's a development mode on the Android. You turn development mode on, you connect it to ADB, and then you can use ADB to install the appropriate rooting software.
Oftentimes it involves actually exploiting a hole in the operating system that allows you to get through, a kernel vulnerability or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's typically been how it's done.
Yep.
It sounds like how you do it when you're developing some antivirus software, if you will.
Yep.
Same method.
Similar. But again, you're running a Linux kernel in there. And once you do that, you can actually install software that isn't in the market. You can write your own applications and install the application. That's what that is for some degree. There are a couple of different methods to do the rooting. I was able to get in. I installed, I think, Mass 511 was one of the apps I wanted to install. So I rooted mine strictly to install some apps that weren't available in the market at the time. But I played around with developing, but I've got a lot of other things that I do. Okay, so I'm not an expert at that. There are a lot of different places that you can go to find out how to install versions of Android on your phone. One is most of the mods come from the XDA developers forum. A lot of those guys are the guys that actually do it. Another one that's popular is Cyanogen Mod. And again, they're essentially dedicated to aftermarket firmware for phones. And they're not, both of these are not really dedicated to Android per se. They're dedicated to others, including the Android. FireMod is another site which is dedicated to Android development. And you can Google for a lot of other sites. These are the primary sites. And I looked specifically for dual booting. I didn't really care about multi-booting. It's just that the I like the FireMod. Okay. Now here's a few other sites I was looking around to find. Dual boot your Color Nook the easy way. You can buy a micro SD card for $35 already pre-built for you. This one here, you can get dual booting Nook to Android. So there are a lot of different places you can go. And again, Google is your friend. But the simplest way is to get a pre-built image, take the micro SD card, plug it into your PC. Most micro SD cards come with an adapter you can plug directly into some computers like this. I think this will even take a micro SD. I've got another adapter that I've had for years that I just plug into USB port, which is just this thing I picked up a few years ago.
That, I recognize that. That does not support SDHC. I remember that one.
Yeah, it does.
That one does?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it.
It does because I believe I have a SDHC in here. So I couldn't find a regular micro SD around.
They do make them that have.
Well, I know they make them, yeah.
So you're working in a fairly cooperative sense then because you're relying on some firmware to find the USB and initialize it and read your image in, and so on. You're not blowing anything away, right?
No. Okay. I have it completely stock.
Yep.
If I take
right.
out the micro SD, my system is completely stock.
Understood.
So I can go into Barnes and Noble and say, fix this, if it's still under warranty. One of the things that I found is that if you download a 16 gigabyte image, it will not fit on a 16 gigabyte SD card. So, now, one of the things I didn't say in here is how to copy the image to your SD card. It's very simple. In Linux, you use just DD. DDIF equals the name of the image. OF equals the physical device / dev / SDD or whatever your SD card is and it's plugged in. And it just completely overwrites that SD card with the image. That's the easiest, simple way. Once it's done, it's on there. I also found that putting the 16 gigabyte image on there, or at least the 15 and a half gigabytes that I actually wrote, took hours on my Linux system. I found that there's a Windows program, there's a Windows 32-bit program that I had on my laptop at work that is much, much faster. So either I might have a USB 1 or I've got the kernel misconfigured or something.
Once you've written that image onto the flash, and this, when you're running the system, are you running strictly out of RAM or are you updating, does the software as it's running update the...
You're running off the SD card.
Is there any issue of, you know, the cycle?
Slow.
How about overall lifetime? I guess nobody really knows yet.
No.
Get at least a class 8 SD card or else you'll probably die within 4 to 5 months. So class 2 SD card, it's guaranteed for it at least 2 megabytes per second, while class 6, 6 megabytes and so on. And so the lower the class, the lower the quality, meaning it'll die faster, especially when it's, because you're running an operating system on it, it'll die sooner.
Yeah.
These OS images haven't been modified to not constantly be updating metadata on the disk and so on, right?
Yeah.
So what's in 16 gigabytes? Like, is it just...
It's just an image.
So how much does the OS itself mean? How
small. I think you could actually do a 1 gigabyte with no problem.
Okay. You could do a 4 gigabyte partition and copy that and then have other stuff with data over that.
Effectively, yeah. There are a couple of different ways to do it. Probably the best way to do it is start with the clockwork mod. That's a little bit more complicated, requires the use of ADB to do some things. You've got to format a couple of partitions on it, but you probably have a more complete system when you're done.
Does the stock OS that comes with the unit run strictly out of RAM and not have these update issues with the...
That's right. Stock, you don't need the SD card. When you buy stock color look, you don't get an SD card.
But it's a strict, so it loads from a read-only image and then runs out of RAM.
Yeah. I just mentioned clockwork recovery. Oh, another thing about the clockwork recovery is that you can also overclock your CPU. I didn't throw that modification in there. More for time in preparing this, because we had started planning the meeting before I went on my trip to Montana. But while I was in Montana, one of our servers decided to, it didn't want to boot anymore. And we had all sorts of trouble trying to get a new server in there temporarily and stuff like that. But then Jabber did most of the work there, but still it took a lot of my time doing this presentation. So I didn't really have time to play with it a lot. So I took the easy route, but I did initially do the clockwork recovery. I didn't put up a video, a picture of that, but I think I have one on my cell phone. Okay. But once, the thing is with the monster root pack and stuff like that, if you have to get the zip files. If you put them in the right directories, they'll come right up. And I just didn't have the time to play around with it and do the other things and stuff like that. But I think that this might be, for somebody that already knows how to do development on the Android and stuff like that and really wants to work it, this might be one of the better ways to go. ADB is something we talked about earlier. Again, this is the Android debug bridge, as I say here. You can download it, you can get it for Linux, you can get it for Windows. Yeah, it works fine on both, I've used it from both sides.
You can do ADB over network too, yeah. Over TCP.
Good. Thanks, Kurt. Okay. And I said I tried a bunch of different things that some I were okay, some I didn't like. One of the things I did is I tried FireMod, and that mostly is a multi-boot. So you can actually have multiple kernels on your SD card, as I have on mine. And I've got some screenshots that I'm going to go through. Okay, this is the stock Nook color. I took that in my office. One of the things you note here, that smoke, is that's Mount Kilauea that I use as a background in my Android devices. FireMod comes up with this stupid little thing, and it's got a fire going through this. So it was very difficult for me to get something that where you could actually read FireMod up there. Okay, this is the FireMod. This is the Froyo FireMod. And this is the Gingerbread. I'm sorry, this is the Honeycomb, which is Android 3.0. Which I put looks a lot better on my laptop. But I found that with a couple of these things that I, easy ones where you just put an image on your SD card, one of them, like a Honeycomb, but didn't come with Market, and I had, other than using ADB, I had no way of loading any more apps on it. Of course, I could have used ADB, and if I had more time, I probably would have. Okay. One of the things I didn't mention in the presentation is that when you boot this, to boot in the standard thing, all you do is have to, your SD card's right here. All you do is pop out your SD card, and when you boot, it will boot into the stock Android, in the stock Color Nook. If you have the SD card in, if you want to boot into, if you're using the same one I have, if you want to boot into Honeycomb, you have to hold the Nook button down until it says loading Android. And if you just boot it without anything with the SD card in, you'll get the FOIA. So. Okay. That's actually from a previous meeting. After the meeting, we'll break around 9 o'clock, and after the meeting we'll go to the Cambridge Brewery. And let me have a very quick show of hands on how many people are planning to go. So I got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You got 10? Okay. I take a count later because invariably the count changes, people drop out on the way. You know. Steve decides he's going and then passes, he smells the subway and says, oh, I gotta go home.
Is that true?
No.
Okay. But any case.
Last time I arrived before anybody else.
Okay. So, our next speaker. Our next victim is Brian. And I'll unplug my, I think.
Just plug it.
Yeah, VGA.
So it's good that, it's great that there are some Android developers in the room. Anybody from Google? Motorola? Okay, we can dump all over the mixed cultures that they have to merge together, but no, it's a lot of really cool stuff coming down the pike. And when we first sort of thought about this several months ago, actually, having a meeting on Android, part of it was just the motivation that there are new hardware platforms that were coming along. You know, Intel's been for quite some time working on lower power processors. A lot of the processors that are in these devices, I guess sometimes it's hard to tell, but you know, combination of things like from Marvell, from NVIDIA, things that traditionally haven't been microprocessors, but have been like video processors or something like that. Those are the, is this mine actually? This is interesting, what's going on here? I guess it must be
yes,
mine.
Yes, it is yours.
Let's see how we get the real thing up here. So how many people use Ubuntu? How many people use Linux Mint? I'm definitely in a minority. So how many people use other stuff? Windows? Mac? Kind of a mix. Okay, so I recently switched to Linux Mint because I had grown frustrated with Ubuntu after using it from the very, very beginning. And I've had a little bit better luck, actually, with Linux Mint of late. So here, a little bit of this is just going to be show and tell. Any questions that people have, shout them out. I get interested in the tablet phenomenon because they are sort of all around and not nowadays. And it's a little bit hard to tell, I think, these days, you know, what really qualifies as a tablet. Is, for instance, you know, would you consider the Nook a tablet? Would you consider smartphone a tablet? Would you consider, I guess I left my Vizio. Oh, you know, see, the problem with these things is that they're so small, it just kind of leaves lying around. So they're, you know, they're not exactly disposable, but I guess they are certainly losable. So.
You have to put encryption on it.
But yeah, I mean, how many people have passwords on their device how many people have a smartphone, actually? So about half.
Mine is fingerprint. Mine.
Fingerprint on yours. So here's one thing that's a little bit, you know, we can talk about the dirty secrets of Android too. So one of the criticisms has been that there are all these different versions of the operating system, right? This, you know, 2.1 and 2.2. And actually, somebody asked the question about, well, what about the vendors? Do they get to choose what goes on? And when can you upgrade and when can't you upgrade? The difference in, as I understand it, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, the different API levels, the different versions of Android basically are different API levels, which oftentimes will support different hardware types of devices. So in fact, version 2.2 Froyo it supports a certain level of API, and then things above that, like for instance Gingerbread, support additional levels of the API or hardware, similar, frankly, to what Apple did in the early days as it moved through different versions of the Macintosh OS, right? Where, generally speaking, applications that would run on the lower versions, the older versions, for instance, 2.2, would run on the newer versions of the software, but they weren't backwards compatible. So stuff that is written with the Gingerbread API as a target will not necessarily run on Froyo. So for instance, I got this Motorola. It was the first version of a tablet that supported Gingerbread, which for some reason I thought was kind of an important thing to get. But if you write, you can write stuff for this. It's got like different sensors and different functionality and things like that that wouldn't run on the Samsung Droid phone, which is version 2.2 of Froyo, okay? So, however, stuff that is written for this phone would run fine on this version of Motorola. So one of the criticisms of Android, levied by particularly, I think, Steve Jobs on an earnings report call, was that, well, Android, the big problem it has is that it's fractured development platforms. We have all these different versions of the OS. And he specifically named one developer who, what a difficult life they must have supporting all these different versions of the OS. And then that developer, at least as I've read, sort of the next week came out and said, Jesus, Steve, it really isn't all that bad. But there has been a criticism that there are these different versions. And a pretty good one is, the other thing is you've got different hardware, right? So this Motorola Zoom supports 3G, which is this wireless, you know, protocol for data transfer, stuff like that, right? This Samsung Droid Charge actually is 4G, and it is fast. I mean, web browsing, it's faster than, you know, the fiber optic network that's in my residence, right? So, you know, supposedly the Zoom is going to be upgradable to 4G, I think. I'm told now it's going to be September. Is that right, Thomas?
September 8th.
September 8th. So,
I've already flashed mine back to stock, waiting in anticipation.
Okay, and what's the deal? Yeah.
So When it originally came out, they, in all the commercials and everything, they said that it was going to be 90 days. So that 90 days came and gone, and then they said they're having a couple issues, and they were selling them with things in boxes saying that before quarter two ended, and so then people were talking class action lawsuit, and they got scared, and now I've gotten 3 months free on here since I claim so much, so.
Oh, that's pretty good. What's the technique there? 3 months free for?
For data usage. So I've had free data since. Oh.
Take notes, folks. This is the way to go. So, yeah.
Yeah, just keep asking for a manager.
So, okay, so get.
It takes a couple days, but.
Get out of the push button menu mode and talk to a real person. So, the thing, when I bought this, I paid like $50 less. I got a data plan. So, some of these things have either, now you can get them just Wi Fi only. The Vizio is Wi Fi only. I don't think there's a 3G or a 4G, there's no data option, right? So, to a certain extent, what I've got here is the Vizio, which, and there's a TV here, which I didn't lose that, but which we can, maybe I did lose it. Oh, no, there is. So when you actually can use the Vizio thing is, changing channels and remotes and things like that. So it's got an application. It's got a little, infrared or whatever it is in here. It works. You program it to the model version of your Vizio TV. But I think it also works with other kinds of devices. Anyways, the point is, this is Wi-Fi only. No Ethernet in any of these things. Now, this Zoom is, it came with a data plan. It's got Wi-Fi, but it also has a data plan, got certain level data plan, and then I cut back to whatever the minimal data plan is, it basically is what I cut back to. So it just as a maintenance thing. I got this originally, the different usage models for me, if you travel, for mapping, for communications, for information, location. I didn't at the time want to get sort of the higher end data plan all out, fully loaded kind of thing, just because I didn't think that I'd need it. But then eventually I did get it, and it really is, it's unbelievable. But anyways, this has a very limited data plan, which you can check periodically at the Verizon website. This has unlimited data. I kind of got it just before Verizon cut out the unlimited data offerings. And so this has Wi-Fi, as well as data, as well as it's got HDMI out, which is a pretty cool thing to have. So if you want to show stuff on TVs or what have you. Most of these devices do have HDMI out. One thing that's a real, that Steve Jobs, I think, would have a legitimate criticism of, all these devices, I could hand them to Jerry, it probably would take him 10 minutes to figure out how to power on maybe just one of them. Certainly I could give him the one that would take him 10 minutes to figure out, but none of them have power on buttons in the same place. Okay.
Frank, can I interrupt just for a second?
Sure.
A moment ago, there was a little alert up there saying your battery's about to die.
Oh, okay, thanks. Thanks, that was...
That actually happened to me this weekend. I bought a new phone for my wife. My Motorola turns on here, and it's got a fingerprint sensor. So I swipe my fingerprint, and it gets logged in. Her phone has a button on the right-hand side, which is where my volume control is. So hers is a Samsung Nexus S.
So it can get confusing. So, and if John sees like this thing comes up on this one that says your battery's about to die, it's actually my pacemaker. So jump up and down. No, but so some of them have Bluetooth. You jump into the car, it automatically syncs with the car system. Yeah. Unfortunately, the car system is Microsoft one. There's a lot of functionality in these devices. They really and truly are. They're all.
How often does it crash?
Less often than Ubuntu and Linux Mint.
Probably depends on the brakes, an emergency, and a flashlight. Are you sure you want to buy the brakes?
Oh, actually, were you talking about the car or the operating system? I don't want to talk about car crashes.
I was talking about the car.
The reason we have a new car is because of the, so one problem is buttons are all in different places, okay? The other thing is, they might know what the sort of input controls are for Android. Basically, it's got like a home button, right? It's got a menu button. It's got like a go back button. Any other? Panel windows. So those four. Anything else? Primary sort of input. And then everything else typically is on under application control on the screen. Okay? So the keyboards are all kind of, touch typing on the screen. But you get those four main buttons, give or take. And those buttons are in different places. And that would take another 15 minutes at least for Jerry and his wife to find. Because they're, in this case, in the phone, they're actually, there are four buttons. I've never figured out what that fourth one is, but it must be the window thing. They're hard push buttons, okay? On the Zoom, they just pop up on the screen, actually different places on the screen. You know, you have to go find them. And then on the Vizio, which is kind of cool, they sort of have this little light up thing on the bottom. So it's like a hybrid. It's not quite, it's not a push button, but it's not an on-screen button either. It's again, a hybrid. So back to the point about the vendors. The vendors, it's open source. They have tremendous flexibility in terms of how they define, customize, tailor the layout to meet their marketing interests, right? Then typically what they do, I'm not quite sure how this happens, somebody might know, but basically when you develop on Ubuntu or some other familiar platform, and then you kind of spit out a package that you then load down as an app through the marketplace or something like that, right? Part of the way you do the development is you have a virtual hardware device specification that tells you how big the device is. As you can see, all these devices, which all run Android, in fact, two of them run the same version of Android, even though they're very different sizes, different orientations, and stuff like that. Okay, so anyways, when we first talked about this some time ago, partly it was motivated by Intel's going to have new chips. Let's see what we can do. And there really has been a flood of devices, but I don't know if there are any yet with Intel chips in them.
Not yet.
So a little bit hard to see, but I'll shift. One of the things that I'm really interested in is the low power consumption on these things, right? So, you know, any laptop that we have, John pointed out, your battery's running low. Any desktop that we have, you know, it's kind of watts and watts and watts, lots of watts of energy, right? So if you're interested in low power things that actually can do functional programmable things, where do you turn to? I think you turn to these kinds of tablets. So on the left is the smartphone, on the right actually is the Vizio. This is running a free application. It's a little hard to see here, but there's the battery indicator up there. Here's another very cool thing that allows you to monitor, track, log the power usage of the device and for both discharging as well as recharging, okay? So within Android, there's an API that gives you access to, at a fine-grained level, the battery and power management system. Really cool stuff. And anybody who develops on, these are the three platforms that I kind of did, we talked about this, three different hardware devices. So here are my application scenarios that I've kind of used this. You know, there are a gazillion apps out there. They're just like, you know, there's an app for that, which was kind of, it's kind of the tagline for Apple almost, right? But it's true as well for Android. I don't know who's got more apps at this point. I don't know who's got better apps, but there are a lot of them. There are a lot of free ones. Seems in the limited use that I've had, typically, it's like the good old days of shareware. You get a free app, you download it, and you can upgrade it through for some premium version that gives you additional functionality. Oftentimes, though, they have the additional hook here where with the free apps, they'll just be pumping out advertisements to you, right? Which is not bad if you're online or you've got a free data plan. It might be a bit problematic if you don't, though. I use this for web browsing. The other cool thing about all these devices, it's basically built into Android, although maybe the iOS was the first one to use it, but the sort of the ability to expand and shrink and move and where it's all touch and interactive is really cool. So the fact that you have a very small screen isn't always a big impediment. It's easy to navigate and to get around, which of course, you know, a couple years ago, if you had a small device, you were really stuck looking at, you know, 2-point font, but that's not the way it is anymore. Use it for email; it's really convenient. But you know, again, if I had this when I got this, I'm not sure I would have gotten this because this really does a lot of what you need, at least what I need. All these devices have cameras like galore, right? And this one, I don't know how many they have. Right? They got front, they got back. This one actually has three speakers. So you can get stereo this way as well as this way. It's like it makes a difference, you know? But it's Vizio is, do people know, anybody have Vizio TVs? Unbelievable. Vizio is one person?
Yeah.
D dared enough to say that we both shop at the same warehouse. But Vizio is a very cool company. The guy who started it was back in the good old days. He built monitors, the green, fluorescent, kind of pulsing things that would be hooked up to back in the good old days. So he's a monitor salesman. And he figured out that all the good stuff's made in China, right? And so he knew enough to basically take that experience. It's kind of like a virtual supply chain for building TVs. He designs them, they spec them, and then they basically outsource all the manufacturing of them to whether it's China or wherever it is in the world, that he can get the most cutting-edge technology, the most advanced technology for the best quality and the lowest cost. If you're in the market for a TV, we happen to get our first one at Costco. They're all different sizes and shapes, right? Hard to beat in terms of, they've got the internet connections, they've got multiple HDMIs. But again, it's like a virtual, they design it, they spec it, they don't manufacture it, but you can buy it. The other short story on so I did pre-order this because they just came out, the Vizio tablets, about maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Anyway, so I pre-ordered it from Costco at like $329, and sure enough, it shipped August, what would it have been, July 18th, or I don't know when it was. But and then like a week later, they sent me an email saying, here's a credit for $40. We've figured out a way to lower the price to get it to you cheaper, and so, welcome to the credit. So sure enough, like 2 days later, I got another email that said, here's a credit to your charge card. Whoever does that in this day and age, right? So I guess Amazon does with the price guarantee. Anyway, so this is kind of, email, traveling camera, note-taking, a lot of mapping, right? It's if you're, we probably, a lot of us have GPS devices. It's good to, take with you where you go, but there are different ways to get around these days, and the mapping is just so good. We talked about the hard versus the soft controls, push buttons versus the swipe. People know what swipe is? Swipe, you want to explain it, Jerry?
Swipe is essentially a keyboard. It's a soft keyboard where you can go from one key to another without taking your hand off of the keyboard itself. So you go, let's say, from a key here down to here, and you swipe over to it rather than have to take your finger off.
So it's a dwell? It calls it by dwelling on it? But you can slide to another one?
You don't really have to dwell, although you get double letters when you dwell. So you dwell for doubles. So
it's a turn.
So what it does is it based on your turns, right, where you go through. It's a QWERTY keyboard. You get a QWERTY keyboard on the thing. And based upon where you go, it's got some statistical profile of what words would be comprised of selecting letters in those locations. Okay.
S-W-Y-P-E. That's right. The name of the keyboard. It's at least in Gingerbread and in Froyo, it is available, at least on my phone, as just an option built into it. On an earlier version of Android, when I had on my backflip, it was an app. But I had to load, but it still was a soft keyboard. I could switch between and say, what keyboard do I want to use? I found that I didn't like it. I just like the regular keyboard because that's what I'm used to.
It's absolutely the only way I can keep up with texting and my kids because they're kind of like but it is actually, for me, it's probably about an 80% hit rate, 85% hit rate. So it's accurate enough. It's especially accurate the longer the word gets, right? Because the more statistical probabilities that, come into play. So for some it's built in, for others it's not. But actually it becomes, over time, for me at least, it's become the de facto way for entering text. Because you kind of, move through where the letters are, and as you're going up and down, it figures out what they are. So it makes the interaction, yeah.
Another good soft keyboard is SwiftKeyX.
SwiftKeyX. Same idea, or?
No, it's tapping, but it's probabilistic and better than the default one.
SwiftKeyX, right. So again, open systems, open interfaces, open APIs that you can program to, and you get these, kinds of choices. For updates and versioning for the Zoom, it just says there's an update ready, right? So I guess, you know, hopefully you're on Wi-Fi at that time and not on your limited data plan. And then they push them out, right? So you can do the routing and the, you know, this other kind of stuff, but you also don't have to. So for me, it's just kind of like wait and see. And at some point, I'm told the Visio is going to be upgraded to, is it Ice Cream, whatever comes after the, you know, the next version. It'll come along and it'll do its right thing. And the Zoom has been recently updated, and I'm not quite sure about the Samsung phone. Development, I think someday we should, you know, be cool to have a meeting on just doing developments on Android, because it really is, you know, it's a cool platform. It's a very comprehensive development environment. It is free. It's freely available. It leverages existing tools that are open source, like Eclipse for an IDE, and it's very powerful. Primarily, it's in you know, the Java space as your main model for developing applications, but you can also do scripting in Python. They also have this native developer kit that allows you to do things in C or C++ and other native environments. We talked about the user interface. You know, it's kind of new, it's fresh, it is always evolving, and it is somewhat vendor specific. But if you can get past that, we talked about doing the specs. I've got some here, and we can post slides afterwards. There are great specs out there, great reviews at Slash Gear and others. I'll just hit the highlights for each of these devices. I mentioned 4G and with the phone, and it's you know, it is really fast. The Visio tablet, one of the review comments in here was that, you know, if you put it up against some other device, it's not as fast. I'm not doing Fourier transforms on this kind of stuff. I'm browsing the web. It's plenty fast for me. Another thing is that may be somewhat perplexing or confusing. Not only are the hardware layouts different in terms of where the power switches, what's hard, what's soft, but also the application selection is different. So what they stockpile the device with is, for instance, with the Visio, it's obvious. There's a remote control for TVs built into this, you know, installed on this, right? But even the way the screens are set up, they have different selections and subsets of the huge marketplace of applications. It might be, yeah.
Also, the bug fix profile is different for every platform. So some days you'll send off your email and discover that all of your plain text email is now being received by all of your friends in Base64 hard coded. And then that bug gets fixed on one phone, but then emerges again on the other phone.
So the good thing is, being in a group like this, people will understand and appreciate if you're the friend on the receiving end. Which does actually, you know, they had this black hat thing. Anybody go recently? The, you know, Hackers Unite kind of stuff. And the only stuff I like to go sometime, but people said basically leave all your devices at home. You know, you hear people, yes, talking about they have like steel cases around their wallets so that the RFID cards that are embedded in there, you know, don't get read and stuff like that. But you don't hear of too many viruses or those kinds of attacks on Android. Maybe it's because they fix them quick or something. I'm not quite sure.
There
have been some. Yeah. We talked about pricing. The Visio was $289, the Zoom was $499, and the phone was, you know, unless you're getting it with the data plan, it's probably useless. But I got it from Verizon. It didn't actually cost very much, but the data plan did.
What was the phone again?
It's a Samsung Charge. The new phones out that are 4G on Verizon, at least, it's a Samsung Charge. And what's the Droid? There's a lightning thing or
Thunderbolt,
yes.
Yeah, AT&T, which is now slower than Verizon. The Atrix, of course, is 4G, the one I have. My wife got a Samsung, which I believe is now called the Nexus S, which actually had a larger screen and better battery.
Yep.
That was also 4G.
Yep.
The other one we looked at, I don't know.
The original Nexus S is 3G, but I think there's a follow-on that's 4G.
Yeah, I think hers is 4G. So.
As you think about, you know, a future phone to get or plan to get, 4G does make a difference. I mean, it's a surprising difference in speed. Okay, so here's the big thing for me was like power consumption, right? So this is the final pitch, and then so I figured, well, you know, I got up. Kurt inspired me here, and Steve and Rona, we've done some stuff with Sky Sage too, on the solar powering, right? So how can I solar power recharge my tablets? Because you're now at a point where you in fact can run these things off of, you know, kind of 12-volt batteries that are sort of, whereas I tried doing the same thing with Intel Atoms a year and a half ago or so. And, you know, when you're running at 30 or 35 watts, when you get a few things in there and a screen to boot, you really can't get too far. But all of these things, they have built in lots of power management stuff so that the screen's always going off, which sometimes is a nuisance. Maybe there's some way of configuring it or changing it. Actually, there's an app for that. You can do that stuff. But for me, it was like, okay, what do I need to do to solar power this thing? So I'll just kind of quickly walk through the... So here's the phone, and here's the tablet. Originally, I just took the simple approach, which is to use an inverter, which is a thing that converts DC current into AC current, and then just plug the AC plug from the chargers right into the inverter. You know, that's easy, it's simple, and it works great for the Zoom because it only has an AC adapter attached to it. But the converter, you actually lose about a half an amp, and it really chews up energy, right? So I said, let's get rid of that. And then the nice thing about some of these devices nowadays is that the adapters come with, it's got a little thing, you pull it out, it's just a USB plug. People have that? How many people? So it's just a 5-volt adapter, right? So, and it's DC. So if it's DC, you can just pull that thing out. And so what we have here is we have got the phone and the Zoom. This is a charge controller, which kind of takes the DC current and smooths it out from the solar panels and recharges these two 12-volt batteries that are marine cell batteries. And then here you've got a load coming off of this controller that goes right to what that thing in the top is just like a cigarette lighter out of a car, you know, $7, you get them from Radio Shack. And then what comes out of that is just a 12-volt USB recharger, which you can plug into your car. Very handy thing to have, Amazon, $8. And it's an easy way to recharge these devices. So as you're looking at devices, the ability to recharge something via USB, just plugging it into your laptop, it's slow, it takes time. It, you know, if you get down to how much amperage is put out from the AC adapter versus the USB connection, you might see some differences. Maybe Kirk can talk about that. But
Brian, have you calculated what the cost, the energy cost is to charge one of these to full capacity?
Well, we could figure it out now, but the surprising thing is it takes about 8 hours to charge this thing. I don't know, have you done any of this? Have you looked into this?
I haven't looked into the
To get a full charge on this thing, and of course, you know, you can never do this stuff until you had an API and software that would tell you to do it, but the first slide I had up there, it's really nice, and you can just see, and it logs how long it takes to fully charge it. So, you know, it runs, I mean, I could do the math, but it's kind of like, 0.2 amps, and it runs for almost 8 hours. And at whatever, 5 volts or something like that, that it's charging. So
like 20 cents to charge it, or a
buck? I don't know what we, for, well, again, the really cool thing today was, one, today is really the first day I got this stuff working in its entirety with sun out, you know. But so, I mean, I just had this one, a bigger panel that was running this thing for, let's see if we can get back to it, sorry. So this is a 100-watt panel, right, and hanging out my window. And this is, these are two 12-watt panels. They actually kind of look about the same size, but there's quite a difference in size. And I figured the 12-watt are a lot cheaper. It'd be kind of cool if you had a camper and you had, you know, probably one phone and you're only using it for like one call a day or something like that, and you could charge it every 3 days, you'd probably be okay with something like that. That's back of the envelope. But for this one, I mean, it's 100 watts. It's, you know, it's almost 6 amps. So 100 watt solar panel, what does it mean? It means that for an hour in full sunlight, it generates 100 watts of energy, which is, sort of a fair amount. So like today, I just had this thing running for a couple of hours and it produced like 25 amps of energy, which, and if you get one of these 12 volt batteries like that goes in a boat, it's like 85 amps. And so so anyways, it was free to recharge the things today. But yeah.
Question, how much does that panel cost?
Yeah, the economics don't really work out. So if you to answer his question, how much should it cost? You know, it cost me about $600 to charge this thing today. But I'm hoping to make it up in volume. So I actually, did, you know, I'll include in the slide.
$600, or that over the lifetime of the panel, it's going to cost $600 per day to use it.
Yeah, no, it's the first day costs more, and then it diminishes over time. But this panel is like $260, okay, which isn't so bad. So you know, especially considering that a year ago, Kurt, I mean, I don't know, $600.
Oh, easy, yeah.
You know, for this stuff, and so they're far more efficient. They're far more. So I, you know, a year from now.
I'm sure Evergreen has a whole bunch of stuff.
Do any of your tablets have multiple charging inputs? Because I noticed this one does, and this was the $90 Chinese thing. This is a 9-volt adapter that plugs in on wall cube, and it's the standard method of charging. But they also give you a cable that fits into this multi-pin connector, which, amazingly enough, is the standard iPod connector. So the cables are easily available, and you take it, plug that into a USB source, and it charges at a different rate. So you have two different ways of charging depending on what you're trying to do. And I was wondering if any other tablets do that, because I thought it was very weird.
Can you use both simultaneously to charge you faster?
I have not tried that, and I'm not probably anxious to do that. Given what I have learned about Chinese clone tablets, as they frequently do unpredictable things in terms of hardware design. It's amazing that it works at all, but it does. But I'm curious if everything else is just one charging.
That's what I've seen. I don't know if anybody else has seen anything different. I'm sorry, I missed it. What name brand was it?
That's a good question. These are made by a factory in China called Eken Group, E-K-E-N. And you can buy them for about $90 shipped from Hong Kong. And there are people selling them on eBay for about $100. And there's all sorts of slight variations on these. But they're sold under brand names Via, Mid, I don't know, there's a few under Eken Group. Mm-hmm. Some also are by model number. This is like an M009S, and there's an M009D, and there are subtle variations as well. Yeah. So I'm not sure what kind of brand. This one was sold as the ViaPad, because the core CPU in it is made by Via. It's a 650 chip.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why they got the name. But,
yeah.
But there's several different. Some of these were sold through CVS for a little while under the Craig brand, and then they sort of just disappeared mysteriously.
There's another brand that I would like to sample, the ArchOS. Anybody seen these? The Amazon?
Arcos.
I don't know if there's any word on them so far, but they have different sizes and different speeds. Certainly the other nice thing is the newer ones, and they're all like on, they're inexpensive, right? The newer ones are faster than the older ones, and they typically use newer versions of Android. And I mean, it's just going to get faster, cheaper, better.
Well, Arcos has been in business for a very long time. They were the original platform, I think, for Rockbox, which was
They originally made the portable media players.
Exactly.
That and like 5-inch devices with like 250 GB hard drives, like old real hard drives.
The good old days. Okay, I'll wrap up here. So these are the specs on if you really want to get into how this stuff, all this, the works, the wattage and the amps, and Kurt's an expert in this. One thing that I will say that's just really cool, and you can't, read it from here, but these are all the attributes that of measurements of the charge controller that you can get access to either programmatically or unfortunately through a Windows interface. But it tells you, sort of what the battery voltage is, what the amperage is, what the charging current is, what the solar array current is, what the load current is, so again, these are the kinds of things that it's like, my kid is able to squeeze every last ounce out of the mileage in the car because suddenly it's got a gauge that tells him how many MPGs he's going. So thankfully he's looking at the MPGs more than the speedometer, which used to be the only thing that you try to maximize, right? So it's, it's like shift your focus. Sometimes is a good thing. Android development, maybe someday we'll talk more about that. And I think that's about it. So,
Brian, if I can throw something.
Yeah.
There is a meetup that meets every other Tuesday, I think, that's specified that works only with Android development.
Oh, cool.
They meet in Boston.
maybe Jerry could post that, or John on the
Yeah, I'll get back
website.
With you later.
Any questions quickly before I step off to the side?
Yeah, we're going to start moving along.
Thank you very much.
Certainly help you slide, okay?
Yep, we'll do. Yep.
Thank you, Brian.
Yep, thank you. If you find any, you know, droids lying around, just... I'll send them. So who's next? Thomas? Kurt? Okay, good. That's okay. So we should do some quick, you know, as Thomas is coming up. So Thomas is, I don't know, you look pretty young too. So who's younger? We'll get some young people in the audience. But it's, you know, they've done some pretty amazing things with, certainly Thomas is one of the young hacker elite here. And then Kurt's going to talk about some cool stuff that he's got.
No idea.
We'll
figure it out somehow.
20-second
juggling.
Related question on like the Zoom. Do those have connectors for the real world, you know, USB or something like that?
You can.
You mentioned HDMI.
Yeah, so I do have a USB adapter for the micro USB. So it's a USB on-the-go port that was officially first supported in Honeycomb 3.1.
And not that you're alluding to it, but I mean, I think the early iPhones or, you know, whatever devices, it was just, you know, no interaction at all with the outside world through USB, right? Yeah. So all of these devices are really open. They do have
micro display ports.
USB connectors.
Yeah, they all
in general, what happens is sometimes, actually with the Zoom, I had to find a third-party application to let me like view the files on the USB device. But most of it, you plug it in, and Android's smart enough just to say, you've got a USB device connected. So for instance, that's how I get music over, or...
Or if you ever wanted to find yourself doing a lot of typing, or a USB keyboard or something, would it recognize and use that?
Oh, no, that's a good question. I was thinking specifically file devices, but I don't know about keyboards.
Yes, it does work.
It does work? Okay.
Mice and keyboard work out of the box.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I've used it a couple times.
Any other questions, Thomas?
Thomas here. We have
some external graphics card.
Do you have HDMI?
No, I don't. This, you know, Apple proprietary crap.
He's got a splitter too, so.
Actually, I think this will work. Oh, I won't need this.
Okay. Do I have what?
Do you have a laptop you can record on? It's not a standalone device.
Yeah.
The USB needs to be plugged into your laptop and you run the software on that laptop.
Well, I was just going to show my site because I have video and stuff. So,
but does it not connect? Is that the deal?
Yeah, no. There's no whatever it's display port. You know, proprietary.
Do you want to just walk around and show it?
He does not have a VGA. That's a Mac.
Is it a website? Is it a website? You can just use mine.
Okay, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah,
I'm just going to use.
Okay.
I'm just going to use Brian's.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. So I'll try.
Okay, I'll take the stuff back to Jammer then, if you don't need it.
How do we connect? Do I need to connect? Guys.
Connector right here.
Okay. Shall I?
Good.
Okay, so my name's Thomas Summers, and I'm a 15-year-old high school student, and my name's Thomas Summers. I'm a 15-year-old high school student, and work with Kurt here a bit. So I've been working with Android, kind of hacker, backside developer. I don't do any applications or any of that stuff, but I have worked on a couple custom ROMs and some other development on Android since about December of 2009. And Today I did bring a Motorola Zoom tablet, just like Brian had, so I'm not going to talk about that a lot. But also, about 2 weeks ago, I did get HP's new touchpad device running WebOS instead of Android. I got it for $299. They had multiple discounts for that, and decided to sponge on that. So what I've been working on the touchpad and the Zoom is working on dual booting and virtualizing operating systems within them. So I just use virtualizing, even though it's not emulating any code or anything. It's just a CH root jail. But I'm trying to create a easy way for the average person to be able to take, say, Ubuntu or any other ARM OS and be able to run that side by side with their on their Android or other Linux-based device. So, on you can't really see on here, but I do have a Ubuntu terminal open on here with it running inside of a CH root jail, and I was currently trying to get it to dual boot, but I was having issues. It was working fine this morning, but not working now.
It always happens.
Yeah. So the dual boot does work. I just need to figure out what I screwed up. But right now it's virtualized on here. So up here I have on my site, on computer, I did get featured on Android Central, PC World, and multiple different websites back in March for being able to run Ubuntu in a CH root jail. And I have video here.
Hi, so I have my Motorola Zoom tablet unlocked and rooted. So, and last night
that was me. So, got about 40,000 views from that. And since then, I've been trying to take that and be able to make it a dual boot environment. And
OS just executing the root environments of the apps and libraries and so on.
Exactly. And I've been also trying to make it so that you can mount, say, USB. So either the internal storage of the Android device, so you'd be able to access any of the documents or other things that you're using within Android, you'd be able to access them within, say, Ubuntu, and vice versa. I have had success with that with an external hard drive or a flash drive on the Zoom. I haven't been able to do that on the touchpad yet, but I hope within a couple of days I'll be able to figure that out. What I do find very interesting with the touchpad, and since this is my first WebOS device and you may not be familiar with it, is that it is running Linux 2.6 kernel. The next update is supposed to go up to the new 3.0 kernel, so who knows when that is going to happen. But the really innovative part of this is the multitasking on WebOS. So if you can see here, each application you have is in a card, and you have just one button on here, like the iPad or iPhone, and using that button, you can go from within one app, go out, and be able to see all of your applications. To close an application, you go up and just fling it out. It's very, very intuitive, but then for people like us who like to tinker with our devices, just like Android, it's very hackable, and just instead of having to root it, HP and Palm, when they originally made it very easy. So you just download their SDK and you plug it into your computer, run it, and you have root access just like that. Instead of having, so with Android, developers have to try to figure out an exploit that they can use to gain higher privilege root access on the device and then have to package that in some easy deliverable way. And each time that does get harder because people at Google are pretty smart at figuring out how to stop that.
How open is it? Do they allow you to actually overwrite the stock OS if you want
to? On WebOS?
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh. So that's how what I'm trying to do with the dual boot. But instead of overwriting the entire OS, I create a separate, right now it's a 3.5 gigabyte partition that I have ARM Ubuntu. I'm surprised how open they made it, because I've been using Android, like I said, since 2009, and it's never that open. Even though it's labeled as the big open operating system, and I still love it for that, the manufacturers have really gotten in front of that. So Samsung, Motorola specifically, because they do lock the bootloaders and sign the keys, making it impossible, almost impossible to sign ROMs, to be able to sign your own ROM and flash it. HP just gave you the keys, and to your car, they they're not going to say you can't drive it, so unlike some of the OEMs. So I think, especially since Motorola did, so Google purchased Motorola on Monday, I'm hoping that will change, because Google, I hope that they're still open to have the open mentality. What you may not know is that all of the other versions of Android before Honeycomb have been part of the Android open source project, but the source code for Honeycomb has not been released, and Google has said that they have no intention to do so, which is violating the GPL, but who knows what's going to happen. I guess the Free Software Foundation wants to go after them, but I think that would just fail with how big Google is. But I don't really know the legal stance of that. So to compare these two, because in just regular use environments, like Brian was showing with Honeycomb, it does offer a much, much better experience than tablets, which aren't made to versions of Android which aren't optimized for tablets. So it's very speedy. Offers, I don't think, as good as WebOS multitasking. So you have a little button down here which opens up all of your different windows, and you can scan through them. And then press like maps. It has your maps. While I don't think that says, I mean, it's really what you'd like to do. With WebOS and multitasking, it does freeze the application when you go out. So say if you're playing a game or something, and you go out and it freezes the application, which if you're doing something, sometimes if the application developer isn't smart and doesn't save it properly, you lose all of your data, all of that saved data. But on Android, it saves it differently, which translates into better battery life on WebOS devices, but chances of you losing out on what you're doing. I'm not really into the stock OSs on this. That's why I'm trying to emulate or dual boot them, so I won't really talk about that much. But what I will say is WebOS is really great for your hacker, person that wants to tinker and get the most out of the device, while Android has great user functions, but it's getting more closed down as time progresses, sadly. So that's really all I was going to talk about. I'm sad that I can't show what I was doing. I have most of my stuff on my laptop, so.
Okay.
So WebOS is just in the
town, right? Nope. No, they already have phones. So WebOS came out in 2009 under Palm. So Palm has the Pre and the Pixie when it was originally released. Then they had the Pre 2, Pixie, whatever. And then when HP bought them, this is the first HP-branded device. So it's been a bit it's interesting how HP, because you would typically think HP would want to lock it down, but they haven't changed their stance on developers since they purchased Palm, even though they did fire laid off most of the Palm team, which was sad.
Yeah. I worked for HP for a year, a couple of years, as a contractor.
Any other questions or? Okay. Thank you.
When Jerry told me or announcing that we will have an Android Wars today, I'm very excited, because that having here a BlackBerry Playbook, it's not really an Android tablet, but then from last month, somebody's leaking out that they're planning for an Android player on Playbook. Okay. Thanks, Jerry. Sorry that I started without you.
Yeah, that's good.
So, last month I found that the Android player that's planned for Playbook is leaked out in the wild, and I managed to download it from internet. I think it's still available if you Google it somewhere. You can download that. And with some instructions that I found from internet, also from this website, it's called N4BB. So this guy is putting many information about Playbook and BlackBerry, just because that he loves BlackBerry, I guess. So I managed to load the Android Player beta. It's still a beta product, so it's not really official support for from BlackBerry. And also, I managed to load some applications, Android application that I think it's really important, or it would be really interesting if I won't have it on my Playbook, because the Playbook tablet, a little bit introduction for the Playbook tablet here. This one comes with QNX OS, and it does comes with a couple of applications, but there are many applications that I think it's missing. One of them are Kindle, Book Reader, if you love Kindle. They have Kobo, but a book collection doesn't even match with Kindle at all. Also, other things, some games like Fruit Ninja or Angry Birds, they don't have it. And Rovio, the company who made Angry Birds, they don't even have any plan to write up to port it to Playbook. So it's kind of a bummer. Once I bought this, I was expecting that it will come with many applications. It turns out that it has very limited application. But then when I found the Android Player beta for Playbook, it's now I got excited again. So the platform version that I'm using currently, this is my BlackBerry tablet OS version 107. Rumor said that 108 updates will be available by end of September, and it will contain the official Android Player. Well, it remains to see. We shall see that. And the Android Player beta, from the information that I got from here, it says that it's an Android 2.3.3, which I believe is gingerbread. Oh yeah, one thing that I know about the Android versioning, it's other than it's all desserts, it's also sorted in order, in alphabetical order. So I don't remember what ABC, but then donut, eclair, froyo, gingerbread, and then honeycomb. And later on, I suppose it would be ice cream sandwich.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, that's trivia, I guess. And we'll need BlackBerry desktop software. It doesn't really need the entire BlackBerry desktop software package. I only need the driver so that my computer could communicate with the tablet. And Java SDK 7, also Android Debug Bridge, I think Jerry already explained before, the ADB tools. That's the tool that I will need to load the APKs or the Android package to the Android Player here. And I also put the reference that I've got from the n4pp.com in my slide here. I don't know, Jerry, do you plan to provide the slide deck available for everyone? Okay.
So what does player mean in this context?
That's, I try to understand that better. I think it's either trying to emulate the function of Android on it, or it could be, it virtualized the hardware so that an Android OS could run on top of the QNX OS. So I'm not sure about that yet. Yeah. Yes.
I believe all it is the Dalvik VM implementation on top of QNX.
Okay.
So it's kind of like Wine.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Wine.
It's just JVM implementation API. So since all apps work on top of the JVM, as long as you port the JVM to whatever OS you have, you're good.
Okay. Yeah, that's a question to